Extra, extra, extra. Welcome to Revolutionary Podcast Utena, where one kind of expert and one total newbie watch Revolutionary Girl Utena and talk about it for your enjoyment. Hi, I'm Randy.
And I am Jared.
Jared, nice to see you. Nice to speak with you again. How are you doing? What's new?
What's new? Just living the life of an anime fan, watching Utena for the first time as the newbie. But I feel like I'm learning things that I didn't know before about this series and how dark it can get.
Yes, all things are being revealed, which is so exciting. I don't really have too much new either, considering we're doing this just 2 days after our last session. So,
yes,
nothing new other than it's been more Utena, the show that we're here to talk to you about. We're going to be going through the whole show and film, and no spoilers, you know, from further ahead stuff. So if you're listening to this episode where we cover, strangely, 6, 9, and 10, you'll only hear us talk about that in previous episodes. Nothing ahead of there, so you're safe there. If you'd like to watch the show with us, you can find it all on Nozomi Entertainment's YouTube channel, except for the movie. Same thing on Funimation Now and on Crunchyroll. You can, of course, also pick up the DVDs and Blu-rays from Nozomi Entertainment on Right Stuff, Amazon, all those great places. Jared, we watched a lot today. Are you ready to just jump right in?
We did. And yes, I am ready to jump right on in.
Well, good. The first one we watched since last time we found out that episode 6 and 8 were actually aired out of order because of production issues, so we're watching them in intended production order. So we watched episode 6, Take Care, Miss Nanami, which aired May 7th, 1997. Jared, would you mind letting me know what happened in that one?
Sure. On that day, on May 7th, 1997, let me just try to think back, back to those days. Okay, the summary is: lately, someone has been trying to take Nanami's life. Overhearing a conversation between Anthy and her brother Toga, Nanami misunderstands that Toga is the one who is trying to kill her. After that, someone saves Nanami out of a danger, and she falls in love with him, who turns out to be a young boy. Nanami asks the young boy to be her boyfriend, but she does not seem to know the difference between a lover and a henchman.
Excellent. Some other background information about this episode, it was storyboarded by Jun Matsumoto, who worked on Blood Plus, Digimon, Dragon Ball Z, Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, directed by Yukio Okazaki, who worked on Bakugan, Death Note, Hellsing Ultimate, written by Ryota Yamaguchi, who worked on Cowboy Bebop, the original one, not the Netflix one, Great Teacher Onizuka, Kanon, Ranma One Half, and the Escaflowne movie, and animated, animation supervisor by Akemi Hayashi, who worked on the Rebuild of Evangelion series, Gunbuster, Gurren Lagann, Ouran High Host Club, amongst many others. And we're going to give a little bit of director commentary from Ikuhara himself here before we talk about the episode proper, who he says, "This episode originally went into production as episode 8. It was, quote, in production as episode 8 during scripting, storyboarding, and even after animation started. But I got switched in the broadcast order with episode 6, Curried High Trip, which broadcasts as episode 8, because that episode fell behind schedule. Because I always called this episode 8 during the production process, the impression stuck in my mind to this day. Curry is episode 6. The kangaroo is episode 8. It's a comedic story, but it shows Nanami's feelings for Toga. This wasn't just about Nanami. It was also about how we'd present Toga. The original plan was to connect stories with a Toga episode theme. First, in episode 8, we'd show Nanami's feelings for Toga in a comedic way. Then in episode 9, we'd show Toga in contrast with Sionji. Then in episode 10, we'd show Toga using Nanami's feelings for him. And finally, in episode 11... we show Toga facing off against Utena. Not so much a spoiler, because we saw that in the next episode preview.
Scandalous.
I'd used a group of 3 identical characters before in Sailor Moon S. It was strangely fun, so I tried sticking them in this show, too. The staff liked them, too. It was probably more like the staff found them convenient. So we turned them into semi-regular characters. It's largely thanks to Miss Hayashi, the animation director, that the production troubles weren't reflected in the quality of this episode. I like how Toga looks so unnecessarily cool during the climax when he defeats the kangaroo." So, Jared, I know that you have expressed to me that, like, oh boy, Nanami. And I had to tell you, well, there's two out of the three episodes we're watching this time were Nanami focused. So this is our first one. What did you have to say? What kind of notes did you have for this episode?
Everyone's favorite Nanami. I had a lot. All of my notes have question marks and exclamation points, such as, like, very dramatic, because that's what this episode was.
Oh, yeah.
Such as, someone is going to kill Nanami? Toga is trying to kill Nanami? Horses and chickens in the hallway? It was a golden boy all along. Kawabuki, which is not his name. It's Kawabunga. And Toga...
Suwabuki, just so that everybody knows.
Suwabuki. Toga saves everyone from the boxing kangaroo with his, quote, unnecessarily cool look about him doing that. Yeah, this episode, now that you read that commentary mm-hmm. makes sense for what they were doing. I sort of picked up on that, but that makes a lot more sense now that they were building a number of episodes to show more about Toga. We definitely got to see pieces of him in mm-hmm. the past, more as that club president figure. But in this, he actually, we learned just a little bit more about his personality beyond being just like a playboy. I mean, he right. still is like a playboy, but...
Oh, yeah, through and through.
He's here, and he's saving everybody from kangaroos. Overall, I think this episode was definitely silly, just kind of like the Curry episode.
Yep.
But the the last, like, minute of this episode with Toga versus the kangaroo was really fun.
it made it all worthwhile. Yeah, it's more Nanami-focused, but not so much comedic. I mean, obviously, funny things like a horse in the hallway and a kangaroo, a boxing kangaroo on the loose is, you know, very ridiculous and funny in that way. But, you know, kind of more focused on her feelings towards her older brother and this new kid wanting to take advantage of that and try and change it to be more about him. He's going to be the protector, and even though he's the one setting up all of these death traps for her, so that way he can come in and save her at the last moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a smart move on that kid's part, but
smart but manipulative and insincere.
Yeah. I mean, I think the episode had some kind of visually interesting moments. Like, the beginning was at night with the cars going through, and mm-hmm. you only see a silhouette of the golden-haired boy. And they imply that he's an older kid, but really he's not.
Right.
And he just had feelings for her since he was a little kid. It's all your kind of standard. It kind of felt like your standard generic anime.
Yeah.
Whatever. But Toga... In the end, he just pops in and punches the kangaroo.
He's the cool one that saves the day. He's the prince.
Yes, the prince. But yeah, I don't have much else to say on this episode yeah. beyond it's just a lot of horses and chickens and kangaroos. And that there's definitely someone on staff who likes to draw animals, so it's cool.
Yes, and they're definitely passionate about that. And yeah, I don't think there's a lot more to say about this, but I think it worked really well as a warm-up into the episodes that we got into this session. So I think then we'll move on to talking about episode 9.
Yeah.
The Castle Said to Hold Eternity, which aired May 28th, 1997. We're back to our normal episode numbering, so nothing should be out of order, as far as I can remember. But would you tell me what... would you read the summary of this episode for me?
Yeah. In the Kendo Dojo, Sayonji and Toga are fighting a Kendo duel. Toga defeats Sayonji by a narrow margin. Utena hears from Sayonji that they... have fought hundreds of duels in the last 10 years. Sayonji also tells Utena that he wants to win the duels and take Anthy to the midair castle above the arena. A memory crosses his mind about that raining day when he was a young boy. One day, he receives a letter from the ends of the world, in which they say the castle will fall down to the arena today. On the other hand, Utena gets a phone call from someone and he says Anthy is being kidnapped at the forest of the arena, or spirited away.
Yes.
So, interesting summary for what really happens in this episode.
Yeah, that's very a cursory, surface-level thing.
Mm.
This episode was storyboarded by Takuya Igarashi, who directed more recently Bungo Stray Dogs, Cutie Honey Flash, lots and lots of Sailor Moon. He is also the storyboarder for things like Darker Than Black. He also directed this episode. Being a very story-heavy episode, it's not a surprise to see this was written by Yoji Enokido, who helmed like the first like 7 episodes of the series, the real building blocks of everything. And then animation supervisor by this This one is hard for me as an American. Animation supervisor by Megumi Kadanosono,
yes.
Who worked on such things like the second opening for Attack on Titan, the opening for Code Geass, Ghost Stories, worked on episodes for Your Lie in April, the TV show, Martian successor Nadesco, and other such things. And before we jump in talking about ourselves, let's do that director commentary from Ikuhara. Yeah. The first segment I did not copy over because it is full of spoilers for later, and I don't want to talk about that with you, and I don't want to talk about that with our audience, so I'll just do the last section, which is, two boys discovered an unusual toy one day. You got hold of it, didn't you? That's right. I have it now. Really? That's when the game began. It often happens that a relationship becomes stifling because of a shared past. Even if you have no particular interest in a toy, when you find out he has it, you think, I need it too. They say that, in that world, only one princess is chosen.
What is all of this mystery?
I want to hear your notes, because we don't tend to talk a lot while we watch these episodes, but sometimes we'll say something here or there. I think the only conversation we had during this episode was during the eye catches, and I'm like, how you doing?
And I just have flashbacks to coffins.
Right. Let me know what your notes are, and we'll talk about it.
Notes are a little longer for this one.
Sure. I figured this one would be the meatier of the three.
Definitely, but I don't have as much comedy in my notes this time. It's more honestly just trying to keep track, and I think I did okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. So yeah, we covered the kendo duels between Seonji and Toga. Something was talked about for about eternity. Seonji was talking about that eternity is up in the castle.
Mm-hmm.
Or something eternal. And then, yes, we got a flashback where Seonji and Toga were out. They were dueling for so long that they ignored the horrible weather coming. And they were riding the bike back to wherever they live. And so basically, though, Toga stops and realizes there's a funeral happening. And this flashback just keeps going where he's like, I think there's three coffins inside. And at the same time, when he's thinking that, there's these people from the funeral are like, yo, have you seen a young girl running around? Her parents died today. So instantly you think, oh, well, you know, Utena's parents died when she was young. We don't know much about it. We don't know what happened. Even though they've had the same flashback like five times in the series so far, I don't think they give much detail. Toga's like, we need to go investigate. So when they get there, they go inside and it's this massive church. And there's three coffins instead of two. Well, like, how could somebody have three parents? I mean, I guess you could figure that one out. But no, it's actually Utena's, well, presumably Utena, a girl with flowing pink hair, who's a young version of Utena's, inside one of the coffins. And so that's like a lot. And that's like just half the episode, right?
Yeah.
So all of that happens, and there's scenes about like just like a moment where they discuss the showing her something eternal, to which I think suggests to give her life to get out of the coffin again. All that stuff is just kind of who knows what's going on. So then when we come back into present day, though, Seonji went and he took Anthy to the entrance of the tournament area, place where you need to show your ring to open the door. Just like in Lord of the Rings, and okay,
just like it.
But like, so Anthony's like, no, don't do this. And then after this, like, Utena just arrives and finds that Seonji is in the water area that's near there, like an aqueduct. And I'm like, oh god, he's dead. But no, he was just kind of punched or something. And Anthy is gone. And we're like, okay. And I mean, this is all based off of a letter that he received from End of World and saying that this needed to happen. It's like, all right, cool. So he's just following what he thinks he's supposed to do. When Utena and Seonji get up there, we see a vision of his death. And Anthy is like up in this, you know, rose type thing above the arena that's been extended up there. And platforms are raising into the sky and stuff. And I'm thinking, like, who in the world built this? Like, this is a lot of money. And then the castle, like, starts to break. And I thought like Sionji was gonna die. Like you actually see the castle hit him, and I'm like, oh man, this show finally got dark. Not only was the church stuff dark, this is getting really dark. And then it's just basically a vision. So Sionji saw a vision of his death. Utena saves Anthy, whether she was up in the sky or it was a vision, who knows. But something that happens here is a duel starts. And we kind of realized this wasn't really a scheduled duel. And Toga actually steps in and gets hit in the back with Sionji's sword. And that's when we learn at the very end that Toga was the one who sent the letter as End of World. But he's on the phone with someone as he's saying this and that he had done this. But there wasn't really any repercussion. But whoever he's talking to, which is presumably End of World, could be someone else. That you know, he's like, yeah, I did that. Cool. That's how it went. And he had a bunch of ladies around him.
Oh, of course he did.
So, and then we learned that Sionji got expelled.
Yeah.
So that's a lot. So my notes this time were literally just kind of typing what really happened because it was so much. Like when it was just the beginning and it was like half, not even halfway through, we got the big flashback at the church and this like weird Toga with like kind of like almost like playing with Utena's hair and trying to be a prince. And he's living his, you know, every damsel must be saved personality life and all of that.
He's chivalrous.
It's just so much, you know? Like, what do you think? Like, I know you've seen this episode at least once before, and I know you obviously know what this episode was coming here, but, like, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, it's very interesting to get some more backstory of what happened to Utena on the day that her parents passed, because we always see her as this gung-ho, enthusiastic, and self-assured person, and then seeing this just a few short years ago when her parents passed, she decided, nothing goes on forever, so why do we even bother continuing on if it means nothing? So I'm just going to lock myself in this coffin and because I'm sick of it and I don't want to do it anymore.
It is very mature for... this is that thing that happens in anime sometimes where they'll write dialogue for a small child that definitely sounds like it should be a teenager or an adult. Because the way she was talking was very mature.
It's very philosophical.
Very philosophical, yeah. But, I mean, it happens. It's an anime thing.
Right, yeah. I mean, we could always just take it as this is what we understand it to be. But, like, children have the same, have these thoughts and things, and they have these feelings. It's just that usually they don't have the words for it. So this is just kind of giving Utena the words for it while portraying, you know, her feelings. Which... it's totally understandable. But yeah, it was very interesting to get that and throw this thing in the mix of like, oh, actually, she's met Toga and Sionji before going to school with them. And it's kind of left up in the air of like what happened because Toga leaves and tells Sionji to find something for her that is eternal so that they can coax her out of the coffin. And then a couple of days later, at the actual funeral that is going on, we see that Toga is smiling, and Utena has come out of her coffin. So she's obviously gotten better, and Sionji wonders if perhaps that Toga had something to do with this and what he had showed her that was eternal to get her out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have thoughts on Toga's mysterious, chivalrous things that he's doing, even at such a young age?
I mean, is this like a long play? Is this a... something that, like, was, like, Toga born just to be, you know, is this, like, a chess game? Is this someone's, you know, sick idea of something that's happening?
Are these all coincidences, or has this all been a plot from the beginning sort of thing?
Right. I think it was probably a plot from the beginning. But maybe if that's the case, then I don't think Toga quite realized that he's probably being used or something. There's definitely... something strange about everything that happened in that flashback, and they clearly don't reveal what brought Utena out of the coffin. And it may or may not have been Toga. Sionji just thinks it's Toga, so yeah.
Now, if I'm remembering correctly, in the letter that Sionji got telling him about what he, like, going to the castle because... the castle will come down tonight. I know that Toga called Utena to tell her that Anthy has been spirited away. Did he mention her to Sionji in that letter, or was that just, hey, the castle's coming down, do you want that eternal thing up there? Because Toga specifically says that she was spirited away as a reference to what the adults said back when they were looking for Utena. So it's clearly a callback to, hey, remember that memory, little brother? Or something of the sort. Yeah, it's Toga is pulling a lot of strings here, which is very, very fun. Just to suddenly be like, oh, okay, now I'm starting, there's some light being shed here.
Yeah. He's pulling so many strings that maybe he's one of the puppet masters.
Now, I... Go ahead.
I was going to say, he just has a high-pitched voice hiding in there somewhere.
I knew, when we were watching it and I saw the vision of Sionji being crushed by the castle and then him being like, oh no, what was that? What just happened? I was like, I know Jared's going to be crushed because he really wanted, you know, the stakes to never be higher and to see somebody get hurt or dead. And then it turns out, no, but at least he got expelled. That's something.
Yeah, he was expelled. Well, we don't quite know this yet, but his diary got burned. He's he's just like, yeah, they kind of, even though he's been a real piece of work, I'm trying to use nice words here. He slaps Anthy like every single episode. Like, he's so horrible, like the episodes he's been in. But Sionji, they almost painted him like we're supposed to like feel bad for him in some of these episodes. And he almost looks more, I don't know how else to say this, but a bit more majestic.
Vulnerable?
Or like, I'm thinking of like a different tone for him where in the past he was just, he's always in his school uniform. He's a real jerk. But then, you know, he's wearing his kendo outfits and then, yeah, he's over here just whatever. It's like they tried painting him a little bit differently, like a different light, but maybe vulnerable is the word. I'm thinking of a different tone where, I don't know, he's...
So what do you think about that? Do you buy it? Do you think that he's done too much badness that he shouldn't be given any sort of sympathy?
That's a really tough question because, one, I mean, I don't condone any of like the physical abuse in this series.
No.
But I want to say that everyone abuses Anthy. Like, everyone hits her or kicks her or pushes her to the side.
Or treats her like property and nothing
more. Treats her like property. Yeah, she's just an item. She's just a tool. And no one really cares for her, but except for, you know, Utena, who just still doesn't understand what's going on. But everyone kind of mistreats her. So I do feel like it's so commonplace for that, that how am I supposed to think of, like, Sionji, you know, as always like a bad character? No, because he's always been, everyone's doing the same thing to her. So it doesn't make it okay, but it makes it like, it kind of sets this bar where, yeah, I mean, Sionji is going to do this every episode. So you can expect that. And he's real crap. He's horrible for that. At the same time, they kind of do pull some of those strings that make you feel bad for him. Toga, if anything, I mean, I don't really feel bad for him. I'm glad that he got expelled. I mean, it's kind of going to Toga's devious ways. If anything, it painted Toga as like more horrible than we may realize. So that's kind of how I'm going with it.
I think much along the same way as you do, in that nobody here so far is totally in the right here. Sionji has definitely done a lot of bad things and a lot of things that would take a lot to atone for, but I appreciate showing him in a way that rounds him out as a person, and that he's not just the mean, abusive, ne'er-do-well sort of type. You know, seeing him as a child, seeing him now, and things like that. I think it's good that he was expelled just for there to be consequences for your actions.
Yeah.
So it we'll have to see how things go from here on out, if he comes back from his expulsion or what have you.
I mean, the first few episodes with Sionji, he's always doing the same thing. He's just always, he's either in a duel or he's hitting Anthy. And then what's horrible is like, you see more of that. Like, Himemiya does it. I'm sure there's probably someone else who did it. I don't know. But there's so much awkwardness that happens with that, where it's like, it's almost like this weird, you know, standard of the show where Anthony's always going to be slapped, or Utena's going to be slapped, or Himemiya might get slapped, or it's like, it just keeps happening.
Well, Himemiya is Anthony. That's her last name.
Nanami? I'm getting the character mixed up. Nanami.
Okay. Oh,
no.
That's Nanami, okay.
Nanami Himemiya is what I thought her name was, but guess what? It's Himemiya Anthony.
Nanami Kiryu.
Where's Kawabuki when we need him?
Sawabuki is his name.
Sawabuki, Kawabuki. I thought I was doing... I did good until this episode with the names, but that's okay.
I will also say the character's name is End of the World. I'm telling you this four episodes into the podcast, but I've always written it out that way. I'm like, maybe he'll see it. He'll see the in there.
The end of the world.
There you go.
But yeah, that it's just everyone likes to abuse Anthony, and I'm not okay with it, but it's become so standard that you're just watching it, you're like, okay, yep, that's typical. Oh,
check
wait,
the box.
Yeah, it's like, oh wait, a castle just fell on Seonji. That's horrible. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. So this episode was kind of a turning point. What did you think of it? I mean, I know that it was heavy, but is that something you were looking for?
You could kind of instantly tell that the tone was going to be different. And overall, I think that it was definitely like a decent payoff for some of the more silly episodes we had recently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, between Curry and a horse in the hallway with chickens and... a boxing
and
kangaroo
and right.
Elephants surfing. all of these weird things that it's like, okay, I mean, that's great. It's animated
the pencil
pretty
box
well,
full of snails.
And it's fun to watch. But this episode just was like, yeah, let's just, yeah, oh, the snails and the octopus in the closet. But right. No, like this one finally does it. It has these moments of, you know, from Seonji like drowning in an aqueduct to this duel that wasn't supposed to happen. It's all orchestrated by Toga, and it's definitely a lot. And you get Utena's past finally. Yeah, there's like finally there was things that reveals that we've been waiting for.
Yeah, it's good. Let us take a quick break though, and then we're gonna talk about the next episode, the final one in our trio of episodes. Sound good?
Oh yeah.
Great. Okay, we're back now to talk about episode 10, Nanami's Precious Thing, which aired June 4th, 1997. Jared, would you mind telling us what happened for this episode? Give us that summary.
All right. Taking the Rose Bride to the arena without a duel, besides inflicting a wound to Touga. Touga. I'm losing it with the names. Touga. Seonji is now expelled from school. Uh-oh. Nanami blames Utena for Touga's wound. Utena apologizes, but Nanami does not forgive her. A memory crosses her mind that she gave a kitten to Touga as a birthday present when they were very young, and later, from jealousy, she kills the kitten. That's a spoiler for the end of the episode. At Touga's birthday party, which is now in current day, Utena brings a bunch of flowers to express her gratitude, but Nanami is very upset by all of this. Touga suggests them fighting a duel on the arena by the code of the Rose Seal.
This episode was storyboarded by Jun Matsumoto again. Worked on things like Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, One Piece Film Gold. Directed by Katsushi Sakurabi, who directed things like Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon, Love Hina, and One Punch Man. Written by Kazuhiro Uemura. And when I looked up his credits, this is the only listing. So, all right. Sorry, Kazuhiro. Animation supervisor was Masahiro Aizawa, who worked on things like the first Digimon movie 1 and 3, Dragon Ball movie 4, Ergo Proxy, Legend of the Galactic Heroes. So he's been around for a bit. I mean, this was also the late 90s, so that's not too wild. And then let's do some quick director commentary from Ikuhara, and then we'll jump right in. He says, When I was a child, the center of the party always seemed to sparkle. I was standing on the sidelines, gazing at that sparkle from afar. I thought the sidelines were my place. Surely I could never approach the center of the room. But then I was chosen. I touched that sparkle in the center of the room, and no mistake. Still, I know full well that is something that won't last forever. The day the contract ends, I'll turn into an unchosen girl. So I'll go back to the sidelines again, huh? Smash the eggshell for the revolution of the world.
All right, buddy. These directors' commentaries lately are getting cryptic.
Right. Very philosophical and poetic, but like not really anything to do with what's happening.
I mean, you had to redact the, you know, other one.
Previous
because
it's one.
So full of spoilers. And then I'm just like, what? Is that referencing the flashback? And then now we're at like half of this would make sense. Yeah, the attention in the center of the room. Like,
I mean, that is what Nanami wants. She wants to be the center of everybody's attention, but more specifically Toga's. So, yeah. You know, she'll do what she can to get there, even if it means drowning a kitten. Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, Sayonji's done a lot of bad stuff, but I think this one is kind of top of the list for me.
Oh, this is one of those awful things of like a petty character that, you know, doubles down on their brother love complex. And I mean, as soon as I saw that box, it kind of was painting that angle. And of course they confirm it. And it's just not great.
No, I mean, immediately afterwards, I mean, she kind of stops and looks, I want to say with remorse, but knowing there's nothing she can do. And then she runs back home begging her brother for forgiveness. I mean, she is very young at this point, obviously does not grasp the fullness of what she is doing. And she knows that it's wrong, but it's like, oh man, it's hard to like you, Nanami, when you do shit like this.
You hear like stories of kids who accidentally like handle an animal too rough or certain things that happen that are just kind of tragic accidents. This is just pure just being a child that definitely didn't know better. And it's not an excuse, though. It was pretty terrible. And I mean, I have a new kitten in my house that I've had for about 2 months now. And it's like, if someone ever tried to do that to my cat, I would probably throw them in a box and put them in the river. So,
there you go.
Yeah, I'll go find that third coffin and throw them in.
I'm sorry to have to make you go through that as a new cat owner to see this episode. Because,
well, I mean, at least like Toga was given a new cat from Anthy. So
yes.
I mean, it all makes up for it. It was all cute and stuff, you know, Neko Neko, nya nya.
You know, after this whole thing, and we find out that the next person to duel is supposed to be, in the order, is supposed to be Toga, but he's still wounded from Sayonji cutting up his back. So Toga reveals that there is another duelist that hasn't been chosen yet that can take his place, at least for now. And it's at that birthday party, after him getting his new kitten and Nanami still being upset at Utena, that Toga presents her the choice, because he just puts the ring on her and says that you're a duelist now, and tomorrow you will be fighting Utena. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there is a finite number of rings, or he can just get more, or if that is Sionji's ring, because one assumes if he's expelled, he's no longer part of the school club. He has to turn in his badge and his gun, or his ring.
I thought the same thing, too. I was wondering if he had an extra ring, or I automatically assumed that it was Sionji's ring.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's been a while. I don't recall what the deal is. But yeah, that would be my assumption, that it's Sionji's, because he's no longer there. And we had talked about it at the end of the previous episode, but we had gotten that Sionji trusted Toga with his exchange diary that he's been keeping with Anthy for a while. And Toga says that he'll take care of it, and then immediately throws it into a furnace and burns it. I'm like, hey, guess what? Toga's a real heel. So just so you know, not that you should be, I think, ever really rooting for Sionji, but like, man, to double cross your brother who trusts you so much, as we've seen in these last couple episodes, to no end other than to just be a dick, is impressive, almost. Oh, Toga, you're a big hot mess.
And I do think that if this was like a something of a trio of episodes where they build Toga's personality out even further than before, then they've done a good job of it, if that was the goal.
Oh, yeah.
So I know we're heading into the ending of this first arc, so they've really painted Toga as this first true villain in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's kind of hard to say, like, what the level of him being a villain is. I mean, I don't know, like, what this anime gets up to later on, but I do think, if I were to get a new prediction, I think he's being used, and I think his whole life has been like this, and I'm wondering if we're going to get, like, a quick backstory about him in the next few episodes, that maybe he was approached, maybe he was saved, maybe there's some kind of prince character that told him he needs to be a prince. I don't know. There's something about it. But,
yeah.
Or, I mean, I still think that Anthy is pretty mysterious, and there's some strange things about her. Like, what if she's pulling the strings all along? You know, that would be right. Quite the reveal that, you know, this is all some weird observation of characters. Like, I don't know. It's definitely interesting to me. I am enjoying it even further after finally a pretty serious episode or two.
Yeah.
But yeah, these characters, I can't really like Sionji or Toga as human beings, but I did feel a little bad for Sionji and his diary being burned and all of that. Yeah, nothing will ever make up for him being a fan of physical abuse, but
right.
You can only kind of feel a little bad for him for being set up and removed from the equation, because now there's less people on the student council that could possibly get power of that revolutionized the world.
Well, it's very interesting, because even after he was gone, we still had that introduction to the student council going up the elevator to have their meeting. And I was like, is something missing from here? And I'm like, no, because Sionji, I don't think, has ever really been part of the meetings. He's always been at the kendo club or abusing Anthy at the Rose Garden. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, well, this doesn't really hinder our day-to-day, so that's fine. But, like, yeah, it's been a neat trio of episodes, and we are leading into the end of the arc. Before we, you know, close things out and talk about what we're going to do next time, there was the duel that we had. Obviously, Nanami fought Utena, and it was a very short duel. Nanami didn't put up too much of a fight, and Utena dispatched her pretty quickly. But then Nanami pulled out another dagger and wanted to keep fighting, because she's not in this to win the rose duel and, like, get married to Anthy. She's here to kill Utena, which is, ooh, that's intense. You know, just screw the rules, I don't care, I'm here to get revenge for my brother being hurt and things like that. Yeah, it was a different kind of duel where we had different stakes on the line.
Yeah, and that's when we also see, in the middle of this duel, Toga basically reacts to, like, watching and observing the duel, and we see something happens with Utena's ring, and it kind of glows or shines for a moment, and we see something from, like, the castle up above, which we've seen happen a couple of times, I think, like, once or twice before, where it looked like a figure, maybe it's the prince or someone's body, or, like, something kind of just, like, came out of it for a quick second, and it's like the power goes into Utena, or something, and that's, like, it seems like when she's pushed to her limits, and that something happens like that, and Toga recognized it, and he's like, now he knows about the activation of the power of Dios, or something like that. So, it's like, okay, well, that's cool, but now we just know that this is all set up from the very beginning, and that he's just been studying and observing to do something for his own cruel ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we really hit on any of your previous predictions here, but I will add one to the list that you believe that Toga is somebody else is behind the strings of Toga, or he's being manipulated in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw that to the list. But
it would just be like the most fitting outcome for him, that everything he's lived for in his life of trying to be a prince And it turns out that he might realize he's just always been a villain.
Mm-hmm.
It would be an interesting character take for him. You know, his ultimate downfall was himself, and then, I don't know, he just lands on a sword. But maybe he's just, like, truly cruel and always knew about his own intentions.
Right.
But I just feel like, you know, no character is safe in this.
No, yeah, and we'll see how that goes. Next time we're going to be tackling another 3 episodes, and we're going to finish out the student council arc. So look forward to that. I know I am. I'm very excited to sit down and do more of this, because this has been such a trip, Jared. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity, because I finally found somebody that I could share this with that knows nothing about it, and they are jazzed to watch it. So thank you.
Yeah, and I just want to... I just want to like say one more thing about the episodes we've watched. Oh, yeah, so absolutely. Far. And what it has to do is with, honestly, I know that we discuss these episodes and we kind of, you know, we summarize them. We talk about some certain focal points, and we talk about the abuse of the characters, and the slapping of, you know, occasionally it's Utena that's slapped by Nanami, and Nanami mm-hmm. probably got slapped somewhere or whoever. But a lot of that, I know we kind of just easily talk about the slapping of Anthy, and we, you know, it's because we need to, but as much as we could say, yeah, yep, she got slapped again, it's definitely not okay. And
No.
I'm hoping, and obviously we've made that clear, but I just wanted to bring it up because it's starting to bother me that it's happened. I mean, it's bothered me every episode, but it's every single episode. And I'm hoping that as this series continues, that there's some kind of, like, I want Utena to stop it. I don't want her to, like, I just don't understand why she needs to be, like, thrown around like a tool. Like, you know, it's not like she's just some, like, metaphorically, like a tool you use and then you toss it to the side because you're done with it. Like, what? It's like, why are they all doing that? You know, they feel like there's another aspect of the end of the world, sending letters. There's something else we're missing that just clearly defined her as this object of power. And we've seen like what the potential is possibly from the views of the student council, you know, eternity, the sound of music or something, all of that kind of stuff. It's interesting.
The power of miracles to make their wishes come true.
Yeah. But it's getting almost a little tiring, you know, realizing that that's happening.
Right.
Seeing all of this, they're slapping. Like, I mean, she was kicked to the side, for God's sakes. I don't know. So while it's easy to talk about because it's like the show just casually, you know, hovers over it, and they're like, well, that happened again. There you go. Just kind of like Utena's personality sometimes, where it's, well, that happened, and I just need to keep moving on. I know anime does that a lot, but there's definitely, it's like slapping is the, I don't know, it's just like the horrible glance you could give someone in this series where it just keeps happening and it won't stop. So I'm just hoping someone stands up for her soon, because that girl doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, fingers crossed that something like that we can move on from this. Because, yeah, I agree with you. It's easy to talk about and be like, oh, yep, there's the required Anthy slap. It is not great to see this one poor woman being abused over and over again.
Right.
And I think maybe we poke at it and laugh at it as a ways of getting around of having to view it and being helpless, and that, like, obviously she's just lines. This is just lines and colors and things like that. Yeah. But, you know, that's the power of fiction, is that it breathes life into things that are not alive. So it's like, oh, it's rough to see this, and nobody is saying or doing anything about it. I mean, obviously, Utena doesn't want it to happen and doesn't like to see it happen, but she so far has not been able to prevent it. She's only been able to avenge. And Anthy has refused to stand up for herself and stop them herself. So,
yeah.
But that's hard to do when you're a victim of abuse like that. I don't know. It's tough. It's all a rough situation.
It is. Now that we have that disclaimer out of the way. Absolutely. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and let's hope that ends soon.
Yeah, I say this is only the beginning, but we're coming into the end of an arc, so the end of the beginning is nigh. But we do have a lot more to do. We have a lot more to go through if you're listening after the podcast is over. Enjoy the binge. It's really great. Make sure you're watching the show. Either you've seen it recently or you're watching it along with us. Definitely a good way to do it, so that way you can keep up in the conversation as it's going on. Thank you to our sponsors. Jared, you want to plug? Tell people what you're doing, where they can find you?
Yeah, you can just search for me online for Hot Anime Vlogger is how I go by these days. Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, Facebook.
Perfect. You can check me out at Saber_Breaker. And hey, if you like listening to me talk about anime, I do another podcast with my buddy Doug Drabaz. We talk about Dragon Ball. You can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts, like wherever you're listening to this right now. It's called We Got a Podcast, Dragon Ball from A to Z. So give that a listen. It's going good. We're going through all of the movies, and we've got more stuff to do after that. So check it out. But while you're here, please subscribe to the show. Tell your friends. Post review. Helps us out. Lets people know that, hey, you want to hear people talk about Utena? Well, there's these couple of dudes, and they talk about it, and it's pretty good, I think.
Mm.
But yeah, do that. Have a good time. Get vaccinated. It's good for you. It's good for your friends. It's good for your family. Good for everybody. And we'll check you next time. Theme song Zettai Unmei Moko Shiroku, provided by Astrophysics. You can find their music on Bandcamp and YouTube, or follow them on Twitter at AstroSynth.